Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Ashley Mader is coming back for part two, is here for part two. We last spoke the 6th of July, and she's a psychotherapist, a sex therapist, an educator and consultant, and she has a private practice, specializes in older adult sexuality, but she sees people all the way from 18 to 65. I recommend her very wonderful website, which is ourshine.org. So we're going to talk. Welcome, Ashley.
Hello.
Let's talk.
Thanks again. I love that. I'm glad to be back.
Of course. And I'm glad you're back because you have lots to share with us. And you have clients of many ages, as do I, but you have you might have a specialty. You might see a few more of the queer folks, and we talked about that term, queer. And we'll talk about the websites that are available for these folks for dating. But you know what we touched on the 6th of July was, you know, maybe you are ready to get back out there if you're a single person into the world of dating, and so that requires kind of a mental preparation, I think, to do that. So Dr. Ashley and I will be talking about some of that to find the right balance of having fun and not coming off as too desperate and being yourself. All of these things are tricky, kind of walking a tightrope to manage those things. Yeah. Don't you think so, Dr. Ashley? Having fun, not coming off as too desperate, and being yourself.
Yeah, it's sometimes quite the finessing. And I think it all has to do with really knowing yourself, knowing what you want, knowing what you're looking for. I think all those things go hand in hand with that.
Yeah, knowing what you're looking for. I think doing some therapy, you and I both, of course, are advocates of therapy because we are therapists and we've seen transitions. We've seen people really become more of what they were meant to be and discover the aspects of themselves. I know you've seen that, where people just really get happier.
Absolutely. And I think if someone is looking into getting back into the dating world after the pandemic and it's just like, you know, the dating world didn't treat me very well pre-pandemic, what am I supposed to expect post-pandemic? I think that might be a time, if they have not thought about therapy, it might be a good time to start looking at that, because a therapist can really help a person unpack those dating patterns that might be holding back the love that they're deserving.
I agree with that. I wanted to give you and the listening audience a quote from Lena Dunham, and she said, having a therapist has taught me to be less cruel to myself. Mm-hmm. It's not like therapy has made me the world's sanest person. It's just made me slightly less insane, she said. And she's the actress. I haven't seen much of her on TV, but what was the show she did that was...
Girls. I think she wrote that show and starred in it, Girls, yeah.
That's right. So I think getting mental health support is so healthy, and it can help people work on themselves, or even work on themselves before or maybe while they're looking for love.
Absolutely.
You can do a little bit of both, you know. And I think a lot of people have a little bit of hesitancy about starting therapy because, you know, they think, well, if I choose to go into therapy, it means something is wrong with me. And so there is still a little bit of stigma attached to therapy, but finding the right therapist or counselor is so important. And maybe is made a little easier these days with some apps like BetterHelp.com and TalkSpace.com. Mm-hmm. And this makes starting therapy easy and convenient. Do you know anything about either of those websites, Ashley?
I know what they're about, but I have a friend that uses BetterHelp because sometimes the area that I live in, there is the bright side, there is no stigma with mental health and the therapist. Everyone I know has a therapist. It's hard to get a therapist in this area because they're such a hot commodity, which is a great thing. So my friend went on BetterHelp because she couldn't find one in this area, and it's helped her a lot. I do know that sometimes, depending on the app, there are sometimes only 30-minute sessions, which can be good or bad depending on who you are. It's worked well for her. They're very fast and efficient sessions. But that might be actually helpful. That might be a good way of dabbling into therapy.
It would give the person a sense of what it's like, and that they don't have to be frightened by it or intimidated by it, I think, because having someone to talk to is so important. Now, if you're one of the people listening who really doesn't want to put in the effort to find a counselor, a therapist, then talking to a friend can be useful. But I think a therapist is really better because you really want to find somebody who can help you navigate the world of love. And
absolutely.
So you might even research therapists who specify in relationships and dating. And I do
sex, dating, and relationships. But I also think if anyone is looking for help in that, in those areas, looking for an actual sex therapist. Most sex therapists also do a lot of relationship stuff as well. And I know people might be like, well, I'm not even to that part in my relationship, so why would I need a sex therapist? It actually can be very helpful, or at least a therapist that says sex positive or something like that might be very helpful as well.
I agree. Through the the fact that I have a marriage and as you do, I think I have a marriage and family therapist license and the board certified sex therapist license too, and it is helpful because I get clients who sometimes spent a couple of years with a therapist, and the centerpiece of their relationship was really their dysfunctional sexual relationship, and the previous therapist never went there. And some therapists don't because they're not trained in the field of sexuality. And so it's you mentioned finding a therapist who's at least sex positive. Mm-hmm. If people do have sexual issues and relationship issues too, but they feel like sexual is the first part, I think a wonderful website is asect.org.
Yes.
And that's AASECT for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. Or how does it go? Educators, counselors, and I think that's it.
And therapists, yeah.
And therapists. .org.
Org, yeah.
Yeah. And so you can plug in the town where you are, state, and they'll come up with a list of therapists who are ASECT qualified.
And the other thing, too, is
that can be one way. Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is just going on the Psychology Today website. It's free. So any of these websites they're free. You can look in your area, just put your zip code, and you can even frame it I want a sex positive therapist. It will say different things, a male therapist, a female therapist. Some of them will even have a queer therapist so you can put different things and see what comes up in your area. So you have a therapist that's more aligned with what you want.
Yes. And I have had quite a few new clients come to me through Psychology Today. I'm glad you mentioned it. I Yes, Psychology Today is a very good website for finding a therapist. And I always make a point, if they come through Psychology Today, I make sure that they've also visited my website, my personal website, drdianawiley.com, and where there are details like about the client sessions and so on.
Yeah.
And so I always say to people that come through Psychology Today, visit my website, client sessions. I'd like to have a brief phone conversation with you first. And I pretty much always do that. You know, I always do that, a brief conversation. Just feel like if it's going to be a fit or not, or if I am the best therapist for them, or if they have more questions.
No, I think that's a good idea, and I think that's something too. As you know, as a client, if a client's coming in as a new client or have never been in therapy before, knowing that it's okay to have different consultations with different therapists. This is a therapist relationship is a really important relationship. So you want to find the person that's really the right fit. So if you have to interview, I mean, it sounds weird to say interview, but I that's how I always talk to my clients about that. Is that like if you have to interview a few therapists to see if you have the right fit, go for it, because this is your mental health and you want to have that comfortable relationship with your therapist.
Absolutely. And I put it in another way that's similar to yours, that you have to act like a consumer and shop around. So find several names and then have the phone interview and just find if you're looking for the therapist, find out how many years the therapist has been in practice, how they might approach certain problems, and that can give you a sense. And then some therapists will offer you one session at a discount to kind of, or even 15 minutes no charge on the phone to see, you get a sense if it's a good fit or not. It varies therapist to therapist.
Yeah, I do a 20-minute free consultation with all my clients. And depending, like before the pandemic, I would have them, I mean, I see some clients face-to-face now, but I still do a lot of telehealth. But before the pandemic, I would have people say, like, you can come in, I'm going to book the whole hour, but the 20 minutes is free. At the 20 minutes, if you're like, hey, like, this is working for me, we can continue on for the full hour and then you can leave, make your decision, get back to me. That's what I tend to do.
Well, I like that. I think it's very good. And then you don't charge them for the full hour.
I usually will charge their insurance. Yeah. If 20 minutes is enough for them to kind of get a feel and be like, you know, I'm still trying to decide, like, no big deal. They can, you know, leave, tell me later at a later date. But if they want to continue, like, hey, this is actually working, can this be your first session? I let that happen too.
Excellent. Well, you are a very good therapist. I know that. And people should visit your website, ourshine.org. So I think that in life and in dating and in general, it's so important to be present. I have a quote from a Fernando Pessoa. He says, I always live in the present. The future I can't know. The past I no longer have. And I like that. Yes, you know, I think for some people, I've heard that dating apps can help pass some lonely nights, and they may act as a solid distraction. But some people get kind of bored with judging tiny pictures of strangers on the phone, and some people get bored with a conversation or a movie or a party, and then they turn to swiping as a distraction. But I think that it's important to think about all the time you would get back if you were not spending every waking moment thinking, swiping, and talking about dating. You know, again, there's a balance. Be present with friends, engage in conversations, and genuinely listen to understand, not just to respond.
Yeah.
And that's a fairly common error, isn't it? Not in relationships, not really listening.
It seems like some people are just a couple of steps ahead, or they're already, they might be on a date instead of really enjoying the date and just staying present. They're already thinking about the next 5 dates or where this relationship's going to go, and you're missing the person in front of you.
That's right, because you're already you're not focusing on the current moment. You're thinking more about your future endeavors, and of course you don't have control over that, because being present really helps focus your energy on things that matter right now.
And I think that's important in anything. Is like if you're having brunch with your friends, focus on that. Don't focus on, the phone going off in your pocket that's like says that you have a match on Tinder. Stay focused with your friends. I think that's it helps, and it also helps kind of manage that anxiety and work through that anxiety, because I think there's this FOMO that happens a lot right now with people, especially now that we are opening back up. People are like afraid of missing out on different things, but just staying in the present with the people that you're with or with yourself, whether that's like yourself and Netflix and your cat on a Friday night, or if it's, out at a busy club, stay present with that. Slow things down. It's okay to do that.
Yes, and you're talking about friendships and staying talking to friends and not responding to maybe your phone going off, letting you know you have a match, because some people let friendships fade because the dating takes over, and many are regret that when they let their, say, girlfriend friendships fade because they're now focused on dating.
Yeah. And I think that's it happens so much. It's almost like, okay, well, now that I'm in a relationship, I don't need my friends. But friends will always be there. And I think it's treat others like you want to be treated. And we kind of go back to the golden rule. But it is in that way. Like just being able
I love the golden rule. Do you know that in all of the religions of the world, they all have some version of the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Oh, I did not know that.
All the religions. And of course, in Buddhism, kindness and compassion rule there. And that can get you a long way if you are kind and compassionate and empathic. And you and I are. We're therapists. We've got to be. But I was raised to always be kind, and I raised my children to be kind too. And I can see that in my grandchildren now that their mother is doing a good job. I just had I was telling you off the air that I just had my daughter and husband here from Canada for a little over a week, actually almost 2 weeks. And they tried driving across the border, were sent back. So then they had to fly at great expense and long bits of driving to get to Vancouver. But once they were here, it was wonderful, and was just such a joy to have my grandchildren and my daughter, and just to be present and really, really enjoy the kids and to see how they grow. All of our friendships, all of our family, we need to value them and take care of them, I think. So I'm all for lots of love and being kind and empathic and to slow down. You know, that some people have a silver lining they're telling about, that when we were in lockdown, it enabled us to slow down a little bit and think about what's important to us, our wants and needs. And that's another thing we're going to talk about in regards to dating. But what about during the pandemic and changing your perspective? We touched on this a little bit in our last show that we did together.
Well, I think it is. I think the pandemic made everyone slow down. You thought about what was important, and especially when, you know, going out wasn't an option, it mm-hmm. made people stay a little bit more present. You might enjoy a walk in nature mm-hmm. if you have nature available to you wherever you live, rather than you would a busy restaurant, or you might really start enjoying like the Zoom happy hour and some games with friends on like online or different things like that. Or you might have really taken up making bread or crocheting. I took up crocheting. Everyone, like, you might have started finding things different. Some people learn languages. Some people, like you wrote a book. So everyone, so I think it was helpful for people to learn that about themselves, that it can, you know, you can simplify things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can simplify things and reprioritizing things are important too. If we are dating, we often have a better perspective now if we're dating again. So I think I'd like to talk with you about some signs, some signs that you might have found the right person. And so, because sometimes we hear that, you know, all the negative things you have to look for, all the red flags, and red flags have merit, but they create an undue focus on the negative, I think. So the secret to finding a great partner is really not just about weeding out anyone who has anything wrong with him or her, but rather selecting someone who has lots of great qualities.
Yeah.
Someone with traits and temperament to participate in a happy, healthy relationship. Just to find. So I sometimes call these green flags. Green flags.
I like that. I like that.
Really promising. Yeah. And one of the ones that I really like a lot is that he or she can express and take responsibility for his or her own feelings.
That's
important. A big green flag if the partner can say, I'm feeling sad or I'm feeling angry, rather than somebody who might sulk or rage or give you the silent treatment. Because when a person is open about his feelings, it's so much better than bottling them up inside until they explode. And then we often see a lot of passive aggressive behavior.
Yeah.
So taking responsibility for your own feelings. And I bet you teach some of that in your therapy with clients.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, and you know, to add on the green flags, I've liked this concept. I always help, you know, red flags is always something, but I like green flags because it's way more positive. But I think a green flag would be someone in therapy.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because, you know, like, I mean, again, maybe not every, but like, I think it's definitely a green flag of that someone is willing to work on themselves and grow. And that could also be part of like taking responsibility for self and their own emotions.
Yes, yes. It was a huge green flag for me because I had met a lot of men on Match.com over 10 years ago before that, after my last husband's death. And so when I got Brian's when I saw his profile, I was really pleased to to see. No, it wasn't in his profile, come to think of it. He didn't put it in. But he told me right off that he had, after his divorce, well, before the divorce too, but individual counseling after his divorce. And then he did not date anybody for a year, which is wow. Takes a lot of discipline.
Yeah.
Because he really wanted to get perspective on things. And his therapist said, I want you to make a list of what you really want in a partner. And right at the top of his list was someone who really likes sex. I checked that box, so that was good.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember telling him before we met, because I put on my profile that I was a marriage and family therapist and a gerontologist, but I left out the sex therapist part because I didn't want it to be intimidating, or maybe it might attract maybe the wrong person. Or so anyway, I revealed to Brian in our brief phone conversation, maybe it wasn't so brief, I can't remember now, before we actually met in person, and I said I did not put up there that I'm a sex therapist. And he immediately said, oh, I think that's great. It's so interesting. I want to talk to you about it. I thought, oh good. This is a man who's in touch with his sexuality and not going to be intimidated by the fact that I might know a lot about sexuality. So all of these things. I would have never met my husband, Brian, and we've been together over 10 years. I've said this on the show before, but for new listeners, but we were married in March of 2018. So we've been married, and it's a good thing. It's a very good thing to be so mature and having so much fun and to be able to figure this out.
And I think it goes to show that, like, I think some people, if you are skeptical of dating sites, I mean, you met Brian on Match.com, and I met my partner on Match.com, and we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary on Friday.
That is so great.
So I think, you know, it can happen.
It can happen. And sometimes people that are over 50 are nervous about the sexuality part of it, and I suggest to people over 50 that are nervous about this, I suggest that they might say, "Let's be monogamous for a while and see how we work together," and I call it a try a relationship. because it doesn't take very long, because we can find out, I think a lot of older people, more mature people, find out very quickly whether the person is right. And as a colleague told me, older people get better at catch and release. Catch and release.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And yes, go ahead, Ashley.
I think that's something that, like, you know, writing down your values. I mean, I think we kind of touched this on the last show, but writing down your values of what you want in a partner. Like, are you looking for a long term? Like, I guess first the thing is, like, what do you want? Do you want are you just looking to hook up? Okay, be honest with yourself if that's all you can handle right now. There's nothing wrong with that. But, like, just make sure you're honest with yourself. Do you just want... Are you just somewhere in, like, short term, that you're just going to be in somewhere for 6 months to a year? So you're just looking for short term dating and friendships. Put that. Be honest with yourself. Be honest with others. Or are you looking for a long term relationship that may lead to marriage? Be honest with yourself and be honest with others. So start there, and then thinking about what are things that you value. Do you value, like, a healthy sexual relationship? Do you value a, like, adventurous relationship as well? Or do you value, like, you know, humor or cultural experiences, travel? Like, what are you really, like, get detailed with it. So you know what you kind of want. I mean, and knowing that, like, you might not find that exact thing, but, like, what are your top values? Are they, like, you know, everyone has their big three, and it's usually something to do with like politics, religion, and maybe something else. Maybe it's like substance use or something. But, like, figure those out.
It's so important, and maybe that comes. That's a pretty good segue for another thing that's going to help a lot of dating people, and that is to read a book.
Yes.
And here I would like to make a quote, give you a quote from Fran Lebowitz, and I think you might know her. I do. Mm-hmm. She's been around a long time, and she's very caustic, very bright, a writer. For the New Yorker a lot. But anyway, she says, think before you speak. Read before you think. I like that.
I like that a lot.
You know, I think if you want to change your love life, it's important to notice patterns about your past choices. Mm-hmm. What are the patterns? And this is often used, we use this in therapy. Learn more about your wants and your needs, and there really are a lot of books that open people's eyes to their past, present, and future relationships. And I think that reading a book might not, you know, completely change your love life, of course, but it can provide perspective and some good tidbits to tuck in your back pocket. So,
absolutely.
And the most famous one that lots of my clients mention even before I talk about it, and that is The Five Love Languages, The Secret to Love That Lasts by Gary Chapman. That is a book that has been on the bestseller list for about 10 years. It could be even more than that by now. And it's very unusual for a mental health professional to have a book that's on the best-selling list that long.
Yeah.
And of course, this is the book that, and I'll put it in the show notes, people can go to the number five, lovelanguages.com and take a free test to see how you best receive love. So we have, for example, I think love language one is words of affirmation, and two is quality time. Love language three, receiving gifts. Love language four, acts of service, and five, physical touch.
Yeah.
So, yes, I have a number of introverts in my husbands of more extroverts, and their love language is acts of service.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they can do. They're not real good oftentimes at expressing their feelings, but they'll go get their partner's car washed, or they'll fill it with gas, or they'll fix something in the house. You know, all these acts of service, that's their way of expressing love.
Yeah.
Can you comment on the love languages and maybe some of the examples you've had?
I think that's interesting, because I think it is one of, I hear this from my clients all the time. In some ways, I've literally heard it during a first session. This is my love language. It's very common now. I think understanding each other's love languages, it helps you understand the person and understand that they are showing their love in the way that they can. So I think understanding that is super important, because I think some people might like, well, you know, he doesn't love me or she doesn't care, but they are showing it in a different way. And understanding that, I think it's very beneficial and I also understand that within yourself, if you are starting to date, like understanding that and like what, how you want to receive love.
Exactly. I think the book really does help you understand how you prefer to give versus receive love, how you like to give it and how you like to receive it. And they shouldn't always be the same.
Absolutely. Exactly. I also read an interesting article about the love languages, about how they should include a sixth one that means is distance. That some people having distance for self is kind of part of their love language.
And so I thought you're saying distance.
Really interesting. Yeah, a little bit of distance. Whether it is, you know, just and maybe someone needs a, you know, a hike by themselves or a spa day or something like that, just a little bit of time, or just like time by themselves to read a book. Some people need that a little bit more, and that can be a way of showing a person that you love them, that you're respecting that distance. I just thought it was a very interesting article.
I like that, and I think the other, of course, introverts are more notorious for really wanting some quiet and some distance, and nobody has ever accused me of being an introvert. I'm a solid extrovert, but as I've gotten older, I've realized that I really like my alone time, and that's why Brian and I don't live together. We have the LAT living apart together, so we see each other on trips like we just came back from, and Wednesday nights and weekends. So it works out.
Yeah.
The other thing about having some separation or distance is that you can anticipate seeing the other person more. And, of course, we didn't have this during lockdown for many people. And anticipation, one book I read some time ago pointed out that that in the anticipation, say, of having good sex with a person, looking forward to it, increases the production of dopamine, which is the hormone of arousal, just the anticipation mm-hmm. of it. So a little distance. And then, a little distance. And even the prophet Gilbran said, let there be spaces in your togetherness.
Yes, exactly. So I think I don't know whether like that would be, ever be added to the love language, but to me, it makes a lot of sense.
I think it does too. And Gary Chapman definitely wrote a good bestseller there, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Because I think everyone knows. Like, it's like a language that everyone speaks now. It's like almost common knowledge, I would say.
Yes. Another important green flag is that maybe the person continues to evolve and learn new things. I think it's a real green flag if a partner continues to seek out new hobbies, maybe enjoys traveling to new places. Well, that would have been more pre-pandemic stuff, and trying new restaurants, also pre-pandemic, but things are opening up. Try new takeout.
Yep.
And if this person is interested in a wide range of subjects, because if a partner who enjoys growing and trying new things is much more likely to continue to be interesting as time passes. In the early 90s, I did two studies on aging and sexuality with a physician. And one of the questionnaires we got back from one of our older people, and it sums it up so well, he was 92, and he was still sexually active with his wife of some many, many years. I don't think it was a first marriage, but the second marriage was like 30 years. And he said, my partner continues to be interested and interesting. Interested and interesting. And not getting into a rut and learning. That's where reading helps. So evolve, and of course, a sign of good of successful aging is that you remain curious.
Yes.
If a person is set in his ways, there's a good chance that the relationship will eventually stagnate, or that he won't be willing to modify his life to include things that you might like. So that's perhaps a problem.
You're absolutely right. And I think that if you're going into a relationship thinking that, oh, this will change or I can change that person, don't get in a relationship with that person. But a person is not a project.
Oh, I like that. A person is not a project. That's right. Go on, Ashley. I want to hear more.
So I think a lot of people, I've heard, you know, people say, like, one of the big things, like, whether I had a friend say that, you know, she got in a relationship and she never wanted children. And her partner, who she got married to, wanted children. And they both thought each other was going to change. Like, my friend was going to, you know, like, she did a lot of cabaret dancing and different things like that. And he thought that was just going to stop with her once they got married. And I was like, no, like, that wasn't the goal. Like, that was something that she loved. And she thought that he was just going to not want kids anymore. And they got divorced, which is, it's sad. So I think whether it's just like whatever you're trying to change, a person's not a project. Like, would you want, like, the kind of, you know, treat others like you want to be treated? Would you want someone to come in and change you or think that there's something wrong with you and want to change? I think there's, you know, I think our relationships can teach us about ourselves and each other, and we might learn something new that we incorporate in our lives that might cause change. But going in with the intentions of like, oh, I'll change that about them, then you don't really truly accept who they are.
That is so true. I love what Katharine Hepburn said in this regard. You will always be too much for some. Mm-hmm. Too loud, too soft, too this, too that. But you will always be perfect for the people who really love you. That was Katharine Hepburn.
I love that.
I've been accused, especially when I was younger, of being too much, too loud, too talking about sex too much. As I've matured, I've gotten a little bit better about really paying attention to who my audience is and waiting for questions about sex before I launch into something. I don't do that anymore at all. But yeah, that quote resonated for me because I have been, I know people have thought I'm just too much, but I'm perfect for my husband. He just, and he accepted me as I was, and I him too. But then we have grown together, as I bet you and your partner have.
Absolutely.
Grow together. You have the best opportunity of growing in a relationship.
Absolutely. You can, and I think that's when a lot of work, because if you're, you know, again, like, I don't think it's, you know, I think, you know, if you want to be single and that's like you are what makes you happy, that's completely fine. But I think one of the things is that when you are in a relationship, that relationship with others challenges you as a self as well. And that is when major work can be done on yourself and in the relationship. Because another person is going to trigger all your insecurities. Like, not saying that you're not going to get anyone, you know, you can get triggered by a lot of things, but it's that relationship. That's when all the quirks and all maybe the things that you don't want people to see or know about you, in a relationship, that's when that stuff comes out, and that's when you really can work on them. It's hard to work on those.
That's when you really, I missed that last word. That's when you really what?
Can work on them. Like, that's when you really can notice them and work on them.
Oh, notice
when
them.
You're with,
okay, yes.
Yeah. When you're in a relationship with someone else.
And some people will say that the 3-month mark in a dating relationship is a test, because a lot of times people can manage to put their best foot forward and for 3 months, and then after that some of their stuff may start to emerge. So this leads me to another point, which is that when you're dating, he or she should accept a share of blame for past relationship failures. You know, I think most couples eventually get around, dating couples, get around to talking about what went wrong with their prior relationships. I encourage my clients to ask that, to say, what did you learn from your last relationship? But also accepting some blame. I think it's a green flag if your partner admits that he was at least partially to blame.
Absolutely.
It shows a willingness to take responsibility as well as general maturity, really. And it also may hint at an ability to improve, because people who are willing to admit their mistakes tend to be people who learn from those mistakes and do better in the future.
Absolutely. No, I think that is a green flag. If people can also, I guess, talk about what went wrong and take ownership of what went wrong in the relationship, I think that is a huge green flag, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And maybe there's another, I was thinking about the different green flags before the show, and I think there might be another one, and it's this, that the person feels just as good about the relationship when they're apart as when they're together. Because, some people have sufficient charm or physical appeal to make their partners feel good when they're with them, but that tends to fade fast when they depart. And with a good partner, there's usually a deep down sense of security that the relationship is right, even when the partner isn't around.
Yeah.
Even when the partner isn't around. You just think, this is a good fit. You just know it.
I think that's a good, I look at it like it's like comfort, security, and predictability. I think a lot of times I've heard so many clients just anxiously waiting for a text message to happen. And that's not, it's just not comfortable. It's just like, it just feels manic. It's just not a comfortable feeling. But I think a green flag is when you have comfort, security, and there's predictability. So you are fine.
And predictability.
I think it feels good to know, that this person's going to call you at 5 o'clock on every day or however, every other day, however, there's predictability and comfort. And I think it makes a big, big difference. If someone's trying to play these guessing games, they're games.
Yes, that's right. And most people really don't want to play games. Some have been in relationships where there have been games, and they just it takes them down some unreasonable paths, and then their expectations are different. I wanted to talk with you about the websites, the apps. The apps that are good for queer folks, and talk a little bit about calling them queer as opposed. Yes, talk about that, Ashley.
So these websites, the ones that I've heard about and I've had clients use, they're for queer folks, which is part of someone's gender identity. So some of these, I want to name some of them that people might know. For example, Grindr, which is kind of a hookup app, it's more for gay men. But Lex is anyone except straight or cisgendered people. And Lex is it has personal ads. So you answer people's personals. So I think that's really interesting. There is one called Jack. JACK'D, which are for queer people of color. So I think that's for some people that might be helpful. Her is an LGBTQ woman. And another one, there is JSwipe for LGBTQ and the Jewish community. But the one that I've been hearing a lot about with my clients, with friends is FEELD, F-E-E-L-D, and it's all genders, all sexual identities. I think there's at least 16 different gender identities to choose from, and
wow.
at least 16 or 20 sexual sexual orientations. It's very inclusive, obviously, and it's mm-hmm. about, they have, it's a lot of people who are poly or into consensual non-monogamy has been, mm-hmm. and also BDSM and kink, and I've heard some really good things. It seems like the people that I have been talking about that has been using that, they're meeting awesome people that share the same values. I mean, if you are into like poly or even poly curious, not everyone is one, but maybe you're curious about poly or you're curious about kink. There's been some really, I've heard about like, it's a very honest app, if that makes any, like that people are getting some, you know, having some really good, honest conversations right off the bat. So that's the new one that I have been hearing a lot about and recommending to a lot of people.
I'm really glad that you brought this up, and I will put, perhaps after the show, you can send me some of these links. I think I got most of them, but just so that I can put them in the show notes, especially this field, because you mentioned that briefly in our last show that we did on the 6th of July. And so this time I'm going to go look at it myself. It sounds like it's such an inclusive field. It's such an inclusive website and timely, too, because, boy, gender identity and all that goes with it is complicated. And people may want to use dating to maybe not to find a committed long-term partner, but just a second. I live close to a fire department. Just a second. Okay. And so they may want to meet others that are kind of curious about these, or as you already mentioned, the poly-curious.
Poly-curious, some of them, and, like, I think one of the orientations is, like, bi-curious. So if you're kind of curious about, you know, what it would be like to be with someone from the same sex, but you kind of identify as heterosexual, I think FEELD is a good place for that.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I think it's good to have like queer dating sites as well, because I mean, in these are help like sexual and gender minorities that are not like heterosexual or cisgendered. So they want to, you know, they might want to meet other queer people. So I think that's also, and a lot of the ones that I've mentioned, or some of them are actually owned by, LGBTQ folks. So I always think that's a good thing too.
Oh, they are. That makes sense.
So yeah, some of them are not, but like some of them, I think the ones that I mentioned, like Lex and Jack and Her, I think are owned by LGBTQ people. Another app for just, this is also just purely for hookups. So I'm just, it's called Pure. This is just a hookup app. So if that's really, again, you know, you're making your, like, people's making their goals about what they want. If hooking up is your thing, there's an app called Pure for that.
And spell that, is it Pure, P as in Peter?
Yep.
U-R-E, P-E. Pure.
Yep.
Okay. Great. How times have changed.
Wow. there's so many, many, many more dating apps than when I was using dating apps. There was not even, like, I guess Match had an app, but it was a very new thing.
That's right. I think Match started around 21 years ago, around the year 2000. It was really small then. I believe that's true. And Dr. Helen Fisher is a consultant to Match. And she's been useful because with all of her brain research, and people newly in love and those who've been together a while. And so, we don't have time to go into Dr. Helen Fisher right now, but, there are so many, many options. And isn't that a good thing? Because people, they're beginning to want to get out there. Many have already. So,
and even just the pressure, if you're a person's afraid of a dating app and like, you know what, that's not my thing, join like meetup.com, which is like just like finding different hobbies with different people, or meeting someone in a yoga class or at the gym, or take a wine tasting class or a cooking class. If you have a church community, if that's something that like, you know, there's other ways you can also meet each other or meet people in like one-to-one rather than on a dating app. So can you be creative about it?
I have a colleague and a friend, and she just moved, because she's seen all of her clients on Zoom now. She just moved from Los Angeles to Napa. And so Brian and I visited her in Napa, and she only moved there like in March. And she was missing seeing girlfriends. So she found, I don't know which, I should have found out which app she used. I think it was Meetup. Yes, it was Meetup. And she now has, there are two girlfriends, and they're all left-handed, and they all like sex, and they all like to smoke pot. So
perfect.
They call themselves the Luscious Lefties. Isn't that cute?
I love that.
All left-handed. And she said they've already had so much fun. So she's a very outgoing person, and we've been friends a long time. But I think that it's a wonderful application of the Meetup app to meet girlfriends. Yeah. Because I know when I moved to Seattle almost 13 years ago now, I had no girlfriends here in the city. I didn't really know many people at all.
Yeah,
and I missed that. I missed that a lot, and I didn't think of using a Meetup app, but that's good. So we're beginning to wind down here. I want to thank you, Ashley, so much. You'll be back again. You really have a lot to say, and I think that it's important to talk about this, because a lot of times people are just filled with so much social anxiety when they think about dating again, and you know, the fear of being criticized and rejected by others. Lou Anne Brizantine, MD, author of The Female Brain, what she says in that book, and I love that book, and then the one that follows, The Male Brain, she said, human survival once depended upon popularity. We relied on our clan to provide food and protection. So our brains evolved to be sensitive to the way other people see us. So that heightens social anxiety for a lot of people. And there's a lot that goes on there. But confronting your fears can often make them easier to handle. So that's the end of our show. I hear the music.
Well, thank you. This has
thank
been
you,
fun.
Dr. Ashley.
Thank you. This has been great.
I always enjoy our conversations, and I'll have you back. I'll be in touch. Thank you again.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.